but he could listen. His own sonar clicked softly in accompaniment as he savored the deep rumble of her engines, and he imagined he could be with her when she flew again.
"Never again," cried Ikey. "You shall never fly with her again."
The specter, Kifkri, came into being gradually alongside him, a ghostly figure of silver and sonic shadows. The presence of the god did not surprise or even bother Krydike. He had been expecting it to come. It swam lazily, easily keeping pace alongside the sled.
"You escaped us, yet now you purposely sculpt me out of song. Because of the old voices you heard? The voices from below?"
"Yes." Krydike thought not in Anglic or Trinary, but in the new language he had been learning. "There is ancient anger within this world. I have heard its song." The dream god's great brow sparkled starlight, its small jaw opened, teeth shone.
"And what do you plan to do?"
Krydike sensed that it already knew the answer.
"My duty," he replied in its own speech. "What else can I ever do?"
From the depths of the whale dream, it sighed approval. Krydike turned up the gain on his hydrophones. There were faraway, excited echoes from up ahead. Joyous sounds of greeting. On his sled's sonar display, at the far edge of its range, was a small cluster of dots coming inward. They joined the specks that were Streaker's scouts. The first group had to be Tisht's party from the Seahorse. Making sure no one was nearby to take note, he turned his sled aside into a small side canyon. He slipped behind the shadows of a rock outcrop and turned off his engine. He waited then, watching Streaker pass below his Aerie until she vanished, along with the last of her flankers, around a curve in the long canyon.
"Goodbye."
He concentrated on the Anglic words one at a time. "Goodbye. And good luck." When it was safe, he turned on his sled and rose out of the little niche. He swung about and headed northward toward the place they had left 20 hours before.
"You can come along if you like," he told the god, part figment of his mind, part something else.
The ghostly figure answered in un-words, made up from Krydike's own sonar sounds.
"I accompany you. I would not miss this for the song of the world."
Part 7. The Food Chain.
"Master, I marvel how the fishes live in the sea. Why, as men do a land, the great ones eat up the little ones."
William Shakespeare, King Richard II. Chapter 73. Aki. It was a scream that curdled his marrow. Only a monster could make a sound like that. He fled it almost as hard as he fled the creature that voiced it. By noontime, Aki realized it was nearly over. His exhaustion showed in a laboring heart and heavy breathing, but also in a painful sloughing of the outer layers of his skin. His allergic reaction to the water seemed to be aggravated by fatigue. It had grown worse as he frantically dodged in and out amongst tiny islets. His once smooth, dynamically supple hide was now a rough mass of sores. His mind felt little more agile than his body. Several times he had escaped traps that should have left him meat. Once he had fled a sonar reflection almost into Kathah John's jaws. The giant had grinned and flourished his laser rifle as Aki turned away frantically. It hadn't been by speed or cleverness that Aki escaped. He realized that his enemy was just toying with him.
He had hoped to flee northward toward Toshio's island, but now he was all turned around, and north was lost to him. Perhaps if he could wait until sunset. No, I won't last that long. It's time to end it. The chilling hunt scream pealed out again. The ululation seemed to coagulate the water around him. A large part of Aki's fatigue had come from the involuntary terror that cry sent through him. What devil was it that chased him? A little while ago, he thought he had distantly heard another cry. It sounded like a Terciops search call, but he was probably imagining things. Whatever was going on back at Streaker, they couldn't have spared anyone to look for him. Even if they had, how could anyone ever find him in this wide ocean? He had done Streaker one service in distracting the monster Katha John, in leading him away from where he could do worse harm. I hope Jillian and Hikahi got back and straightened things out, he thought. I'm sure they did. He took quiet breaths in the shadow of a rock cleft. Katha John knew where he was, of course. It was only a matter of time until he grew bored with the chase and came to collect his prey. I'm fading, Aki thought. I've got to finish this while there's a chance to win something from it, even if it's just the honor of choosing my own time to die. He checked the charge on his harness cells. There was only enough for two good shots from his cutter torch. Those would have to be from very short range, and no doubt Katha John's rifle was almost fully charged. With his harness hands, Aki plugged his breather back over his blow mouth. 10 minutes of oxygen remained. More than enough. The high scream echoed again, chilling, taunting. All right, monster. He clenched his jaw to keep from shivering again. Hold your horses. I'm coming. Chapter 74 Kipiru. Kipiru raced to the northeast toward the battle sounds he had heard during the night. He swam hard and fast at the surface, arching and thrusting to drive through the water. He cursed at the drag of his harness, but to drop it was unthinkable. Once again, he cursed the damnable luck. Both his and Moki's sleds were used up, worthless, and had to be left behind. As he entered the maze of tiny islands, he heard the hunt scream clearly for the first time. Until now, he could tell himself he was imagining things. That distance or some strange refraction in the water had tricked him into hearing what could not be. The screeching cry pealed out, reflecting from the metal mounds. Kipiru whirled, and it momentarily seemed a pack of hunters was all around him. Then came another sound, a brave and very faint skirr of distant trinary. Kipiru swung his jaw about, chose a direction, and swam for all he was worth. His muscles flexed powerfully as he streaked through the maze. When a rasping buzz told him his breather was near empty, he cursed as he popped the thing loose and continued his dash along the surface, puffing and blowing with each driving arch. He came to a narrow meeting of channels and swung about in confusion. Which way? He swiveled about until the hunt cry echoed once more. Then there was a terrible crashing sound. He heard a squeal of outrage and pain, and the soft whine of a harness in operation. Another faint trinary challenge was answered by a shivering scream and another crash. Kipiru sprinted. It couldn't be far. He dashed, sparing none of his reserves, just as there came a final call of exhausted defiance. For the honor of Calathea! The voice disappeared under a scream of savage triumph. Then there was silence. It took him another 5 minutes, frantically casting about the narrow passages, to find the battleground. The taste of the water, when Kipiru sped into the quiet strait, told him he was too late. He caught up short of entering a small vale between three metal mounds.